are, you're standing up under fire, so unfazed. That's good. So we'll move on to our next case, Lewis versus Mills. Mr. Baker.
Please the court, Mr. Condon, Mr. Rose. My name is John Baker, and I am here on behalf of the appellant David Lewis this morning. This case presents a fairly simple legal issue for this court.
One thing I don't understand about the case is. If your client were to prevail in this suit, wouldn't that be inconsistent with his conviction for obstruction of justice?
Well, there were a number of claims that were brought against him. And ultimately, I don't believe he was convicted of obstruction of justice. I believe he was convicted of four Class A misdemeanor attempts to one was obstruct justice, but I don't believe that, because that was only as it related to one of the individual claims that had been brought against him. There were a multitude of claims that were brought against him. Ultimately, I believe that he was sentenced.
But wouldn't this claim, this little obstruction of justice misdemeanor, whatever it is, wouldn't that go down the drain if he won this case? Wouldn't it show that that the entire prosecution of him was improper? That he wasn't guilty of any of these things, and Mills didn't think so. He was being punished. Isn't that your theory, that the prosecution was punishment for his failure to go along with the alleged drug activities of Mills? Isn't that your theory?
Well, yes and no. No, because the prosecution. Mills is clearly entitled to prosecutorial immunity for anything related to the actual prosecution itself.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm saying, what does this? If you won here, if you proved what you want to prove, wouldn't that show that even though the misdemeanors or what have you that he was convicted of, that they were groundless? Wouldn't it show that he was improperly convicted of anything?
Well, I don't believe so, because I think that
he really did commit an obstruction of justice.
Well, from a legal perspective, yes.
From a legal perspective.
It was an offered plea. But legally, we have to accept the fact that...
Trust me. You have to accept the fact that he obstructed justice?
We have to respect the
but
fact
But if
that
you prevailed in this case... You would have shown that there was no obstruction of justice, wouldn't you have?
Well, not necessarily, because there are multiple claims that were brought against him. He was only convicted as it related to...
Your argument was that Mills only prosecuted him for improper reasons.
That's correct. I mean, that's correct. And ultimately, of the things that he was convicted of, those only related to one set of the allegations.
But are you saying those convictions were proper?
Well, they're convictions. I can't say that they're not proper. I mean, they were properly entered. He pled guilty to them. Whether there was a factual basis, that's a different question, but it doesn't matter. I mean, he pled guilty to that.
You're saying that even if you prevail in this case, it would still be the case that his convictions had been proper, that he was guilty of those offenses, even if he is right in everything he's saying about about the defendants here. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I fully recognize that we cannot collaterally attack a criminal conviction.
Well, that's, of course, my concern. Yeah.
Right. And I don't believe that that's what we are trying to do here.
Well, but there's a difference between collaterally attacking in the sense of actually trying to get the conviction invalidated and taking a position that's inconsistent with the conviction. And so the Supreme Court says, even if you say, no, I don't want to disturb the convictions, I'm satisfied with those, I don't want relief against them, but if you take a position that's inconsistent with the convictions, in other words, you prove in your civil case that, in fact, you were innocent, even though you're not acting, you're not asking for relief from your conviction or, you know, collateral effects of your conviction or anything.
Well, I think that what we are saying is we are innocent of the bulk of the allegations that were brought against him as it relates to the...
But are the others really severable in the sense that even if you prevailed entirely in this civil case, nevertheless, you would acknowledge, I'm not saying Mr. Lewis should acknowledge, but you would acknowledge that... he was properly, he was in fact guilty of these other offenses, the ones he was convicted of.
Well, he pled guilty to them, so by...
They could plead, you know, you can plead guilty without admitting guilt, right?
Well, and he didn't admit to guilt. I mean, Mr. Lewis had been...
But would this be, if you won here, would this be some sort of vindication of him? And then he could go around and say, look, we proved that... there was no basis for having prosecuted me for anything. Can you say that?
I understand what you're saying, and I don't believe that it would. I mean, but I think that what we have to look at is the ultimate injuries that Mr. Lewis sustained. I mean, these were four Class A misdemeanors that he ultimately pled guilty to, and I believe he was sentenced to 1 year in prison. He had already served. Right. More than the 1 year, and so we have to look at it from the other issues that were raised. You know, this was a case where I believe there were 49 Class X felonies brought against him. This was very, very significant claims. I mean, this was a man who had no past legal troubles whatsoever, and so ultimately he is. All those counts are dismissed. Four new counts are reinstated. He immediately pleads guilty to get himself out of jail. Now, legally, he's guilty. You know, he's guilty. He's pled guilty to that. However, he has pled guilty to something very different than what the investigation was designed to do. I mean, the investigation brought in a tremendous number of people who we believe provided false information. Ultimately, one of the cases he was acquitted on. The other ones were just subsequently dismissed. I do see I'm entering into my...
That's okay. So let me ask you, I'm just curious about this little town, Belgium.
Yes.
So it has a population of only about 400 people?
That's correct, Judge Butler.
So is this gentleman's playpen? Is this the big commercial activity in Belgium? Do people come from miles around or something like that?
I believe the answer to that is probably yes. I think that the way the law works, there are... I think different townships or different communities can establish different rules as far as
about
whether you can serve alcohol and
right.
and what you can do. I think that the reason that the club is in Belgium, Illinois, I think there's probably a strategic reason for that.
There's probably no other commercial activity there, yeah.
I think there's another bar in the town, but there's not much more than that. There's not much more than that.
So you're an interstate near a large city?
It's not terribly far from Danville, and so I think that a lot of the business that it gets is
we have a similar case based near St. Louis.
There are a number of comparable clubs just on the east side of the Mississippi River. In Illinois. So and they all seem to be clustered in the very same location. So.
Well, Belgium is near the Indiana border.
Belgium is, yes.
Is that the
yes.
same notion? Is Indiana stricter about these things so people come from Indiana? Is that part of its draw?
I don't know. I believe the club no longer exists.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think that there were a lot of issues that were going on there, but I don't believe the club exists any longer.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Baker. Mr. Rose?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Jason Rose and Michael Condon on behalf of Investigator Todd DeMilano and First Assistant State's Attorney Larry Mills. This Court has observed in the past that summary judgment is put up or shut up time when a responding party must show that he has evidence that's sufficient and would convince a trier of fact to accept his version of events. In this case, there's no evidence which supports plaintiff's legal theory. And what is that legal theory? The legal theory is that plaintiff was retaliated against in violation of the First Amendment for cooperating with the FBI. Summary judgment was correctly granted by the district court, and we're asking here that this court affirm the granting of summary judgment. And in argument just now,
you're not making a Heck versus Humphrey issue argument.
I would say that is, I think Your Honor was right on it. I do think there is a Heck v. Humphrey conflict here because what were the convictions here? The convictions here were for obstruction of justice and for official misconduct. Now, if you look at the information that he pled guilty to, and that's attached as in part of the record, what he did is he kissed Audrey White in his squad car, and then he lied in a police report about the circumstances regarding his contact with Audrey White. And in fact, you asked previously, isn't Mr. Lewis seeking vindication? That's exactly what he is doing. He is seeking vindication through this lawsuit. He's not trying to actively throw out the conviction, but it's an end run around the conviction, which is what he's seeking to do. How can he say that he was convicted for improper purposes, but yet he pled guilty to various charges arising, and these are the same facts. What he pled guilty to has to do with Audrey White, and Audrey White, in fact, was one of eight of the women who came forward and testified that Lewis fondled them, molested them, sodomized them. In one instance, one of the women says that she was raped by Lewis. Now, of course, for purpose of summary judgment, you don't have to accept that these eight women are telling the truth. I will state that other than Mr. Lewis's denials that he did anything wrong, all of the evidence points that he did everything that he's accused of. Okay? So the fact that he ultimately, in the end, he was given a deal, and he took it, and that's his prerogative. But having taken the deal, he can't now turn around and say, shouldn't have been charged in the first place. If you shouldn't have been charged in the first place, you should have defended the charges, been acquitted, and then you could say, you know what, these charges were bull. But they weren't bull, they were valid charges, and he pled guilty to some of the charges. In terms of the defendants in this case, there's Investigator DeMilano and there's Prosecutor Mills. In terms of Investigator DeMilano, what did he do wrong? And the answer is absolutely nothing. He was a soldier in this army. The initial complaints went to the Vermilion County Sheriff's Department. Captain Rod Keg at the Sheriff's Department was handling that, and he asked DeMilano to interview some of the victims, which he did. Okay, but is there anything? You haven't heard any testimony, or there's nothing in the record, and there's nothing before this court that DeMilano did anything wrong whatsoever. There's no evidence that he disbelieved these witnesses. And as this court knows, what are the elements of this charge of this case? Well, one of is that he has to show that he was prosecuted because of his cooperation with the FBI. Okay.
Counsel, was the information that Mr. Lewis conveyed to the FBI important to its overall investigation of Mills?
Absolutely not. And the evidence indicates that he had no evidence against Larry Mills. He was asked about improprieties by Larry Mills. He said, I don't have any personal knowledge of any misconduct by Larry Mills. And, in fact, the testimony of the investigators is that they considered Lewis neither a significant witness or a helpful witness. They didn't find him to be a credible witness. And there was just this one meeting. The date of that meeting was December 13th, 2006, and there's some significant events that occurred both before and after that date. Now, with respect to what happened before that date, three of the victims had come forward that spring, months before this. Okay? So, and there's no evidence that any of these women were put up to giving testimony against David Lewis because of either Investigator DeMilano or Prosecutor Mills. Okay, so the chronology just doesn't fit plaintiff's theory of the case. And then what happened after December 13th, 11 days after he met with the FBI, he is at the playpen when he encounters Audrey White. And Audrey White, in fact, is the victim that he ultimately would he'd knock on her door, wake her up in the middle of the night. He asked her parents to get her out of bed, and she comes out and he says, well, you got to come with me. And what he did is he took her to a secluded area and he started to make the moves on her. Fortunately, Miss White's mother panicked, called 911. 911 called, and then Lewis decided, uh-oh, the jig's up. I better get her back home before I get in further trouble. Okay, but, you know, again, and then once she, White, I believe, was the fourth woman to come forward, and then with her coming forward, and by the way, she didn't even submit the matter to the Vermilion, the Sheriff's Department. She submitted it to the Belgium Police Department, and they turned it back over to the Sheriff's Department. I do want to talk about Prosecutor Mills, and as this court knows, absolute prosecutorial immunity. It's strong, it's alive, it's well, and it's certainly applicable in this case. And even opposing counsel has acknowledged that it is broad, and it covers him presenting this case to the grand jury and anything having to do with his presentation of the case. Now, in this case, as it turns out, after the grand jury indicted Mr. Lewis, a special prosecutor took over, and Mr. Mills wasn't even involved in the case subsequently. But what has Larry Mills done other than prosecute, which is his job and what he is supposed to be doing? And the answer is he didn't do anything. Okay, the only way that he doesn't have absolute prosecutorial immunity is if he was investigating. And there's just no evidence here. The investigation occurred from a non-defendant, Captain Keg, with the help of Investigator Todd DeMilano. So if there's no other questions, I'll stand on my brief.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Rhodes. Mr. Baker? If another minute, anyone?
I just real quickly would like to address the question that you raised, Judge Pratt. What was said to the FBI in that meeting, that is the subject of an FBI report. We believe that FBI report is accurate. It's under seal, so I don't know that it's appropriate to talk about it here. But our case is a First Amendment case, and I don't know that the significance of what he would have said to the FBI is necessarily relevant in the determination of whether his speech was protected. I think it's fairly clear that Mills, at least from looking at the evidence most favorable to my client, Mills was aware that he spoke to the FBI. And if you believe my client, Mills specifically asked him, what did you say to the FBI? So I don't think there's evidence that Mills knew what was said to the FBI, just that he had spoken to the FBI. We would ask that the court reverse the grant of summary judgment and remand the case with directions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Baker.